Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Bed and Breakfast and Murder by Patty Larson. Narrated by Holly Adams. Chapter 1. Doing battle with a clogged toilet was not how I expected my Thursday morning to start. In fact, I had a whole lot of not much in my sights, a veritable plethora of nada, zippo, blessed and delicious time to myself. Hot coffee, fresh from the pot, the latest edition of the Reading Reader Gazette spread out on my kitchen island, pajamas still gracing my weary self as I slowly and with great relish devoured a mushroom omelet without a hint of interruption. I really, really should have known better. It had only been 2 weeks, but honestly, owning a B&B was like wrangling a house full of 2-year-olds who alternated between cranky demands and petulant whining, topped with the biggest messes I'd ever seen in my entire life. Case in freaking point. I tried not to look down the mouth of hell, staring back at me from inside the glaringly pristine outer ceramic shell of the white throne, my throat catching, stomach doing half flips, and a rather impressive rollover routine that would have gotten at least a 9.5 even from the Russian judges. Instead, I forced myself to smile and swallow and remind myself the elbow-length yellow rubber gloves grasping the handle of the standard-issue plunger were all that stood between me and Pooageddon. A few jabs and weak, efforted prods did little to clear the clog. Time to get a bit more vigorous, put my back into it. The soft groaning yawn behind me made me spin with a scowl on my audience of one. "Do you mind?" I flipped back my auburn bangs, blowing at them to keep them out of my eyes, while the portly fawn and black creature staring up at me with bulging eyes huffed in response. "I'm working here." Petunia snorted violently, spraying little flecks of moisture on the white tile floor before perking her black ears at me, her squish pug face an equal mix of utter innocence and complete disdain for my present predicament. It wasn't that it was her fault by any stretch, but she was here and enough of a reminder I'd said yes to this place on purpose, I almost tossed the plunger at her. "Suck it up, Fee. Big girl panties and adulting and all that." I glared at the pug, and then myself in the mirror as I turned back, catching the wrinkles forming between my eyes despite my 28. Okay, soon to be 29, but who's keeping score? Years. The tightness of the skin around my bright green gaze. At least I'd had the foresight to put my heavy hair in a pony. The very thought even a scrap of myself could touch that mess unprotected made me want to shave my head. At what point? I waved the dripping plunger at myself, wincing as droplets of yuck flew. Did I think owning a bed and breakfast was going to be glamorous and romantic? Petunia yawned, whining in her pug way for me to get on with it then. Jaw clenched and determination in my heart, I went to war. I found a rhythmic rocking motion seemed to gain me ground, grunting at it for good measure, and swearing, lots of swearing. Blaming, too. The damned tourist who decided to use half a roll of toilet paper to clean his precious butt. Mary Jones, my always glass so empty she was dehydrated elderly cleaning lady, for telling me in no uncertain terms this was my job. To quote, "I don't plunge toilets." And my grandmother Iris, for having the temerity to think that I, Fiona Fleming, city girl who hired a cleaner twice a month so she wouldn't have to touch dirt, would be good at the domestic disgustingness of taking over her prized B&B after she died. Yes, swearing helped a lot. And actually created energy, oddly enough, as did the horribly phallic-feeling action of my labors. As long as no one was videotaping this, I'd pretend it never happened. 10 minutes later, panting and sweating and, I'm sure, wearing some of the contents of the toilet and unwilling to admit it, I stood triumphant over the offensive wasteland and saluted the empty bowl with my weapon of choice, The satisfying gurgling sound of sludge disappearing down the pipes made my heart sing. Sad, really, that such a horrible affair could bring me so much satisfaction. But when I spun to receive congratulations from my watcher, the adulation of my biggest fan, I found Petunia had rolled over on her side and went to sleep, her snoring lost until now in the slosh, slosh, slurp of my plunger. Typical. The orange top of my now beloved weapon settled into the white cup at the base of the toilet, squidging as it went. I'd have to make sure Mary cleaned it, at least. As for the throne itself, I sighed at the stench and the excess drips over the edge of the bowl, and, rather than fight with a 70-year-old woman about boundaries, dug under the sink for cleaning supplies. I knew which battles to pick. 14 long and educational days in, and I'd learned more than I'd ever wanted to about the ins and outs of this new life of mine, including just how very little the old lady was willing to do to make my life easier. The bright yellow sponge didn't stay that color for long while I slopped cleaner into the now working throne and gave it a swipe with about as much enthusiasm as I'd approached this job from the beginning. If anyone had told me 6 months ago I'd be leaving New York City and my boyfriend of 5 years to come home to Reading, Vermont, of all places, I'd have snorted my half-fat, one-third espresso, two-thirds regular, two pumps vanilla, one pump caramel, whipped cream, and chocolate sprinkles at them. Me and Curtis County at the foothills of the Green Mountains had said sayonara a decade ago as I scrambled my way out of small-town blah and into the bright and shiny life of college and real life. And exactly how well did that work out for you, Fee Fleming? I really needed my bangs cut, blowing them out of my way again with an impatient puff out of the corner of my mouth. But I'd paid $200 for my last trim, and I doubted anyone in Reading could deliver. Come to think of it, maybe there were perks. Toilet bowl successfully cleaned, I leaned back on my haunches, sneakers squeaking on the tile, rubbing at my forehead with one arm and doing my best not to touch myself with unspeakable grossness, and found, to my surprise, as I often did the last 2 weeks, despite the horrendousness of my existence at times, I actually felt good about being home. Happy, despite my cranky, melancholy staff, my fat pug adoptee, dirty toilets, and fussy guests. Home had felt like the last place on earth I'd ever find myself again. And yet, home was the best thing that had happened to me in a while. "Just don't tell anyone I said so," I told Petunia, who grunted and twitched in her sleep before starting to snore again. A sniff of the air told me the cleaner had erased most of the stink of the regretful incident. A quick wipe with a towel, and I was all set. Unsanitary? Yes, of course, and I'd be sure to bleach the crap out of that same towel when I washed it. But I'd had enough of this entire mess and was ready to reemerge the victorious heroine of my own little story. At least the guests would be happy. Petunia farted so loudly she woke herself, sitting abruptly upright while the stench of her pug bowels surpassed anything I'd just managed to banish. And that moment that should have been mine, glory gained and earned, turned into a sorry state of affairs when Mary, bless her heart, poked her gray and judging head into the room, nose wrinkled as she took a sniff. "You're wanted at the front desk," she said in her 5 packs a day, though she didn't smoke voice, before disappearing again. I looked down at my brown, bespeckled self and sighed. Of course I was. Chapter 2. I left the bathroom window wide open to the warmth of the July morning, already heating up despite the earliness of the hour. Air conditioning or not, the place needed some fresh breezes and a good smudging. I attempted a brave smile at the embarrassed older gentleman and his irritated wife, the current residents of the carriage house's blue suite. Mr. and Mrs. Sprindle didn't comment much, though Mrs. Sprindle did take a minute to huff her robust self in half so she could pat Petunia on the head. "Adorable," she said, pink in the cheeks, with one hand clutching the front of her matching-colored robe shut, rollers protruding from under her kerchief. Who wore rollers anymore? I love pugs. I didn't offer to send Petunia home with them. Barely. Instead, I left them to their morning, stepping out into the fresh air, exhaling in relief while I peeled away the stinky humidity of the yellow gloves. The sun rose over the mountains, beaming down on the extensive garden that separated the carriage house, blue suite and yellow suite, from the main house, six more rooms of varying hues that were appropriately toned to match their names. The restored colonial took up a double-width lot compared to the rest of the street, camped on the end like a white-with-black trim cap to the picturesque, tree-lined small-town residential neighborhood. Only a block from the boundaries deemed downtown and the quaint shops and tea rooms that popped up since local mayor Olivia Walker began her incessant drive to bring reading into the present, using tourism to accomplish her implacable mission, Petunia's bed and breakfast was perfectly placed for a quiet and relaxing getaway at the foot of the Green Mountains. Or had been. I paused in the early morning breeze, letting it blow the stink from my hair. Yeah, I chose to believe it was working. And drew a breath while the three giant koi in the carefully manicured pond in the middle of the garden rose to the surface of the still water to take turns touching their large, gaping lips to the pug's sniffing nose. Fat Benny, the biggest of the bunch, took the most time, but Pudgy Polly and Rotund Ruby had their turns, too. Not my names, inherited from the old lady with a sense of humor. The best part? Petunia's. Yes, my grandmother, darling woman that she was, named her B&B after her dog. And not just this one. Oh, no. This particular incarnation of pugliness was the fourth. Just sit with that for a second. Petunia the fourth. I shook my head and carried on, skirting the pond and the creepy orange fish Mary claimed my grandmother loved as much as her chubby canine, at least while the housekeeper and her sister Betty, my cook, didn't seem to trust me just yet. Petunia herself had welcomed me with a charming and disconcerting attention that meant she followed me incessantly. Everywhere. All the time. Never, ever leaving me alone at all. Teeth grind. If only my ex had been so attentive, I'd still be in New York. Then again, would I? I looked up at the towering mountains that felt enough like distant skyscrapers I wasn't uncomfortable, at the bright blue sky and the trees with their spreading branches and mingling of oak and maple leaves, and sighed. If I was going to be honest with myself, not something I'd been much in the past, I'd have to admit, I hadn't been happy for a long time. Petunia woofed softly, startling me, just as a piercing voice called my name. I knew before I even turned to look who stood at the fence between our properties, one skinny arm raised, hand flapping in greeting, a beaming smile on her wrinkled face. Today, my neighbor Peggy Monroe wore a red bow in her hair, matching the one holding the topknot of her creepily silent little dog in an upright flag of caramel fur that made her look like some kind of misshapen alien. "Good morning, Fiona!" No matter how many times I told her to call me Fee, Peggy insisted on my full name. Because my grandmother did. Sigh. "Trouble in paradise, dear?" I waved back, not in the mood to stop and chat endlessly with a nosy old woman who, I suspected, let her little dog skirt my fence and poop in my bushes. The soft piles of turds I'd uncovered were nowhere the size of Petunia's big deposits, but I didn't have proof, so I left it alone. For now. "Busy, busy as always, Peggy." She shook her head, her bow bobbing as her little dog Cookie sneezed softly, delicately.
"I have no idea what Olivia was thinking," she said, the same old song and dance conversation starting, and exactly what I hoped to avoid. "Luring those developers to our little town, building that big resort and all." Yes, I'd heard this a million times before already, from her and from Mary and anyone else over the age of 65 who lived in Reading their whole lives. I could almost repeat what she was going to say next by rote, lips twitching in the need to mimic her as she went on. "Turned our dear little Reading into a cesspool of criminals and vagabonds." "Tourists, you mean?" I said softly, smiling. She swatted the air in front of her, aimed at me, thin lips a tight line, faded blue eyes a match for her faintly tinted gray hair. "We were doing just fine before all her new-fangled ideas." Did anyone actually talk like that anymore? Clearly Peggy Monroe did, and half the population of this town. Living in a valley surrounded by mountains had an effect on mental development, I guess. Amused, I let her go on, if only to grant me a bit of entertainment after the morning I'd had already, and it wasn't even 8:30. "If it weren't for that Skip Anderson and the floozy he married..." "I'm sure Willow Pink would be delighted to be called a floozy, though Hollywood had called her worse. Still, she was an A-lister, and her husband," said Skip, "a famous football star, so I doubted they cared much through their veil of millions and hordes of fans what aging townsfolk naysayers or the movie reviewers thought of them." Peggy snorted, not at all ladylike and reminding me of Petunia.
"Well, if those two had the sense to keep our town out of the news like good Reading kids, we wouldn't be in this predicament."
True enough, at least. When Olivia asked Reading's most famous natives to join the tourism promotion team, they stepped up. And had they. Thanks to the new White Valley Ski Resort and Golf Club, Reading was suddenly a hub for tourists flocking to see the homestead of their favorite stars. "Too late now," I grimaced at my watch. "Sorry, Peggy, I have to run." "Ta-ta then, dear," she said, all cheerful again, while Cookie watched me with what I always imagined to be a plea for mercy and rescue.
"Come for tea soon, why don't you?"
I watched her blue-gray head of curls disappear behind the fence, and not for the first time wondered what she found on her side to stand on so she could spy on my garden. Nosy neighbors. It took getting used to again. Betty made her slow-motion way around the kitchen as I entered through the back employee's door and crossed the tile floor. Head down, tight, steely curls in a net that made her look like the crankiest cafeteria lady ever, the rounded bow to her wide back giving the Notre Dame lurker a run for his money. The other half of the Jones sisters ignored me as I intruded on her domain. "Hi, Betty," I waved and smiled, despite knowing she either didn't hear me or didn't care enough to acknowledge my presence. I'd never, in the 14 days since arriving home and taking over Petunia's, heard the woman utter a single word. But she had heavy sighing down pat. The portly pug at my side trotted over to her, abandoning me in favor of the bits of some kind of meat Betty was preparing, delivered from elevation into her gaping mouth. The whites of the pug's eyes showed as she scuttled her butt from side to side, barely able to contain herself. "Bye, Betty." I left the faithless dog to her snack, knowing she'd likely get sick later from the excess and that I'd be the one forced to clean it up. But it freed me from her constant plodding attention for the time being. Kind of insulting, really. She chose food over me every single time. I really should have taken the effort to scoot downstairs to my apartment and clean up, but as I considered the prospect of meeting whoever waited for me without a skim of fecal matter between us, I spotted trouble at the end of the hallway, right at the tall, bright front entry. Her chatter reached me first, though not the words themselves. It was the tone, the sparkling and overly cheerful, if genuine, rapid-fire energy expelling itself from the flapping mouth of my old bestie that drove me down the hall at a clip, past Mary, who muttered under her breath about the dirt on my sneakers. Well, she could just do her job and vacuum once in a while. Not my fault the B&B went from sedate one or two bookings a week to overpacked and bursting at the seams since the shining lights of Reading sang their siren call to all the good people of the world to come and visit now, you hear? Daisy Bruce, the eternal teenage optimist, despite our matching chronological ages, turned as I joined her, beaming at me so brightly I longed for a pair of sunglasses to cut the brilliance. Okay, so, poor day. I was, admittedly, a bit grumpy this morning. But could anyone blame me, really? And the towering broad figure who loomed over my old friend's slim blondness wasn't making me feel like my fortunes had turned. If anything, the red-faced man who might have been a football linebacker in a former decade but had gone too far to beer and burgers for his own good had that kind of expression on his thick-lipped face that made me want to back up a step and reassess the situation. His beady blue eyes, so pale they were almost transparent, squinted out of folds. His faintly reddish hair, what was left of it, combed over the shining top of his head. And he had that bully stance, the kind that big men with little care for women seemed to think would make me back down if they just waited long enough. I lived in New York for 5 years. We'd just see who backed down first. "Oh, fee!" Daisy gushed, grasping my upper arm with both hands as if she had no idea she was transferring unmentionable fluids from myself to her. Her pale gray eyes gleamed with charm and not a whole lot else, while she grinned first at me and then up at the large man in the jeans and shining silver belt buckle, whose plaid shirt stretched over the round of his protruding belly. Cowboy boots crushed the deep blue carpet beneath him, pointed toes decorated with chrome. "You're here at last!" Daisy rolled her eyes and giggled. "I told you she'd be right here, silly!" She released me long enough to playfully slap the man's forearm, coyness not an act.
"Fiona Fleming?"
He smiled, too, but my stomach turned when he did, an oily tone to his deep voice. I nodded. "Can I help you, Mr.?" Instead of gracing me with his own name, he extended one big hand toward me. How had I missed the large envelope he held pressed to one leg? I took it out of reflex, confused as I looked down at my name printed on an official-looking label in the center. I glanced up to find him turning to leave without even so much as a hint of explanation. "Excuse me," I said, the envelope outstretched toward him, as if doing so would grant me some kind of insight. "What is this?"
"Deed papers," he said, grinning now. "Thanks to your grandmother's dying signature, Petunia's belongs to me."
I gaped at him, frozen in place, and watched in growing horror while the big white door slammed shut behind him. Chapter 3. My astonished and paralyzed state didn't last long, and before I knew I was in motion, I found myself jerking open the entry and hurtling down the front steps to the flagstone walk. Even so, the man's long stride had carried him a great distance, and I only caught up as he was climbing into a giant monstrosity of a black SUV. I nabbed his arm, pulling him toward me, though honestly, he was twice my size at least, and had he wanted to just leave, there wasn't much I could do to stop him. But he did pause, still grinning, handing me a business card.
"When you're ready to hand over the keys," he said, "next day or two would be good for me. I'll be waiting for your call."
"There's obviously some mistake." My brain fired, spun, wobbled on its axis. This was nuts. my grandmother left Petunias to me. Why would she sign it over to some stranger? I glanced down at the card in my hand. Pete Wilkins, Wilkins Construction Incorporated. Did I even know him from growing up here? You've obviously got the wrong place.
If you're any longer than 48 hours, he said, as if I hadn't even spoken, I'll make sure the sheriff comes along when I take possession.
He snickered at that, like this was funny.
To give you encouragement to move out.
Move? I'm not going anywhere. Heat washed over me that had nothing to do with the growing temperature of the day, the sun overhead, the July humidity. Now, I'm not saying I have a bad temper, but, well, I am a redhead. Scare me or push me or corner me? Kaboom. I waved the envelope at him as he climbed into his truck with a grunt, slamming the door. You'll be hearing from my lawyer. Because I had a lawyer. Yikes. Pete Wilkins leaned out the open window, saluting me with two fingers.
Have a nice day, Miss Fleming,
he said before laughing and keying a button, the whir of rising tinted glass cutting me off. Get back here right now! Oh my God, did I really just stomp my foot on the sidewalk like a little kid having a tantrum? He backed into the street as if he owned it, squealing his tires when he drove off, while I shook and shouted at his retreating license plate. I want an explanation for this! Fee? Daisy's soft and worried tone didn't help at all. If anything, her timidity made things worse. I spun on her, spotted a pair of guests staring, Peggy Monroe observing from her front door. Confrontation was a spectator sport in reading, was that it? Is everything okay? She will never know how much inner strength and fortitude it took not to smack her with the damned envelope I clutched so tightly in my hand, my fingers were tingling. She did have the good sense to back up a pace, though, and my guests, suitcases in hand, hurried inside, as if I might blow at any moment. As for Peggy, she didn't comment, she and Cookie going inside, as if disappointed there wouldn't be fireworks. As for me, I inhaled, exhaled, and dropped Pete Wilkins' card on the sidewalk before carefully and precisely shredding it under my sneaker. We have guests, I said abruptly to Daisy and stomped back inside. Thursday was turnover heavy, one of my busiest days, and instead of being able to take my time and peruse the clearly mistaken document that remained hidden inside the large envelope, I instead shoved it into a drawer at the sideboard that housed the computer in the foyer and got back to work. Cleaning and check-ins, and a long, weary day later, and I realized I hadn't had a chance to even change out of the stinky clothes I'd worn to clean the toilet in the blue suite. With a last sigh of disgust at myself, stomach growling from lack of dinner, I finally paused in the front hall near the desk and removed the envelope. Looked up around the beautifully decorated front entry, with its delightful crystal light fixtures and vaulted ceiling, the bright white wooden slats and soft blue walls. My grandmother's taste had been impeccable, to say the least. There was nothing old-fashioned or creepy about Petunias. In fact, I loved it, more than I'd care to admit, even after this short time as the mistress of this place. If these papers were legit, how was I going to bear giving up this life I thought would rescue me from myself? It's going to be okay, Fee, Daisy said, coming to my side, voice still soft and apologetic. Won't it? I had a very, very bad feeling it wasn't. But the initial burn of fury was gone, leaving behind the kind of sick nodding that usually led to me making terrible life choices. Sure it will, I said. Can you handle things here for a bit? Bless her, she didn't do a whole lot, really not suited to working for me on the physical, manual labor side. But I didn't have the heart to fire her, considering I had...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?